until the question and answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may dial star one on your phone to ask a question. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Virginia Heyer. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today as we host an educational webinar about the operational quality metrics. I am Virginia Heyer, Chief of the Public Relations Branch. As we prepare to release the 2020 census results, we are committed to sharing what we know, when we know it, to help the nation understand the quality of the 2020 census. Today's webinar will not include any 2020 census data, but it will give you all a preview of the type and meaning behind the operational quality metrics that will be available. We are preparing to release the results and operational quality metrics by April 30th, and we'll keep you updated on this date. As a reminder, the webinar will consist of a simultaneous audio conference and online presentation. We will then invite accredited media to ask questions following the presentation. I'd now like to introduce Michael Bentley, Assistant Division Chief for Census Statistical Support of our Decennial Statistical Studies Division. Michael?
Thank you, Virginia. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm happy to be here today to give an overview of the upcoming 2020 Census operational quality metrics. In this webinar, first I want to give a brief review of the importance of the 2020 Census results. Then we'll review the various challenges that impacted the 2020 Census data collection. I also want to discuss the various approaches we are taking to understand the data quality. Then we'll introduce the 2020 operational quality metrics, preview the first release of the quality metrics. We will then discuss the release timing and access information for when they're available, and then discuss what the operational quality metrics can tell us. So to begin, we will first summarize the importance of the 2020 census results. Just a brief reminder, the purpose of the census, of course, is to conduct an enumeration of population and housing every 10 years and to disseminate the results to the president, the states, and the American people as mandated in Article 1, Section 2 of the United States Constitution. The primary purpose, of course, is to apportion representation among the states in the House of Representatives. There's currently a fixed number of 435 congressional seats and at least one in each state. But there are many other important uses of the census data, including drawing congressional and state legislative districts, school districts, and voting precinct boundaries. Also, distributing more than $675 billion in funding to states and local communities each year, as well as informing the decisions that governments at all levels make every single day, and providing businesses and nonprofits with the data to help them make good decisions about their work. Every decennial census is complex and has unique challenges to counting everyone. We only do this once every 10 years, so we need to get it right, but the 2020 census seemed to face a particularly challenging set of circumstances. First and foremost, of course, was the COVID-19 global pandemic. COVID-19 ramped up in the United States just as 2020 census data collection was underway in mid-March last year. This is right around the time that the first mailings were arriving in people's mailboxes. The historic pandemic led to social distancing requirements, mask mandates, and stay-at-home orders that forced us to temporarily cease all of our in-person field operations to ensure the safety of our employees and also the American public. But there were numerous other challenges to the census too, with several unfortunate natural disasters hitting different areas of the country last summer as field data collection was underway, including a powerful derecho that swept across several states, several tropical storms and hurricanes, and deadly wildfires in the West. Those various challenges led to delays in completing the 2020 census data collection, and later with the post-processing of the data, which ultimately meant a delay in being able to release the census results. But now, we are on the verge of releasing the first results from the census, which is an important milestone in the once-a-decade count of the population. With the impending release of the 2020 census results, it's also important to consider the quality of the census data so that the many users of the data will feel confident when they use it and make decisions with it. So, how do we know if the quality is good? As we've stated, the Census Bureau is fully committed to high data quality and transparency. So we are sharing what we know when we know it. We are releasing information about data quality, such as those we will be talking about today, sooner than we have in the past. We are engaging with outside experts from three different groups, the National Academy of Sciences Committee on National Statistics, the American Statistical Association Quality Indicators Task Force, and also JASIN, with an eye towards different aspects of assessing the Census Bureau's work. These reports will advise the Census Bureau on improving future censuses and will help the public to understand the quality of the 2020 census data. The first report from these groups, from the JASIN group, called An Assessment of 2020 Census Data Quality Processes, was released on February 23rd of this year. We know that no census is perfect, and as such, we are examining 2020 census data quality in several different ways. First, we will be comparing 2020 results to established benchmarks, including demographic analysis and population estimates. In fact, a working paper will be released on the same day as the apportionment results, providing an assessment of the 2020 census numbers compared to these benchmarks. Also, the 2020 Census Post-Enumeration Survey is an independent data collection that we conduct each census. It is designed to measure how many people and housing units were missed or counted erroneously in the census. The first results are tentatively planned for release in December 2021 this year, with more to come in March 2022. Now, as I mentioned a few moments ago, there will also be an independent assessments by several groups in the scientific and statistical community. And there will also be a series of formal assessments and evaluation reports that the Census Bureau will release in which we measure and document different aspects of the 2020 census operations. And as we are focusing on today, we are releasing a series of operational quality metrics. So, what are the operational quality metrics? We first introduced the quality metrics in a blog post last month on the Census website. But today, we are going into more detail on what to expect. While no single number can definitively provide an answer on the quality of the census, operational quality metrics are various data points related to the progress and results from the census operations. These can provide insights into comparisons to past census results, such as from the 2010 census, and also comparisons to the national total or to different states. I want to mention that we have previously released several sets of measures related to quality during data collection last year. First, many of you may remember closely watching the regular updates to the self-response rates map to show how well local communities were responding to the census. This map showed self-response rates by state, by county, by census tract, and various other geographies for the 2020 census and also for the 2010 census. As we got further along with the census, we introduced the 2020 completion rates by state, beginning in August last year. This showed the total enumeration progress, which included self-responses and from census takers in the field, as we inched closer to the 100% completion mark. Starting in September 2020, we released a map showing the progress in completing non-response follow-up in each of our 248 area census offices. Lastly, in November, we also released preliminary metrics on the use of administrative records to collect data for some households we couldn't reach in non-response, and on the rate of proxy enumerations, which are when we speak with a neighbor, a landlord, or other knowledgeable person. I'm going to talk a little bit more about each of these topics soon. Now, I'm going to introduce some of the operational quality metrics that we will be releasing next week. First, the operational metrics will show the percentage of occupied, vacant, and deleted addresses by how that status was ultimately determined. This could be from self-response, from non-response follow-up, or group quarters, or other census operations, or was unresolved. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about each of these next. Self-response is what we call it when a household member responds to the census, either online, by phone, or by mail, by returning their paper questionnaire. The self-response operation is how we collect the majority of data for the census count. Beginning with mailed invitations to respond that were sent to most areas, about 95% of the country, along with an extensive integrated partnership and communications campaign to generate awareness about the census and encourage response. Next, non-response follow-up is where we send out census takers to collect responses from those addresses that hadn't yet responded. This could be from a household member that lives there, a proxy respondent, such as a neighbor, a building manager, or landlord, or was determined through the use of high-quality administrative records, which was new to the 2020 census. The third way we determine status for an address is through the group quarters operation, which counts people living in places such as college dorms, or prisons, or group homes, or nursing homes. We also have a category that we are calling other operations for these quality metrics. And this includes some of our smaller census data collection efforts, such as update and enumerate. Now, this is areas where it is difficult for us to deliver mail typically, in places like northern Maine or southeastern Alaska and some American Indian areas. Also, remote Alaska, which is where we began census enumerations in January 2020 last year, plus our self-response quality assurance and coverage improvement operations. These are where we recollect data for some households to ensure we are collecting the most accurate data. Lastly, the final category is unresolved, and this is where imputation was necessary to assign a status and population count. This includes both addresses that were unresolved after data collection ended, or also as a result of unduplication processes during post-processing. We will also be reporting more detailed information about non-response follow-up outcomes, such as the final status of addresses and the type of response. The status, meaning whether the household housing unit was occupied, vacant, or what we call delete, which is sort of census jargon, which includes cases where a housing unit doesn't exist or is a duplicate of another. And when we collect the non-response responses from either a household member that lives there, a proxy respondent, again, that could be a neighbor, a building manager, or a landlord, or through the use of high-quality administrative records. Typically, in non-response follow-up with occupied households, we are able to reach someone who lives there in order to collect the census data. And then with most vacant or deleted addresses, these are verified by a neighbor or other proxy respondent. The April operational quality metrics will, of course, be based on 2020 census results, but also will include 2010 census metrics for comparison. And they will be provided for each state, plus the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico, and the United States total. Moving on, next we're going to go over some release and access information for the quality metrics. The operational quality metrics will be available next week. The exact date for release hasn't been determined yet, but will be released sometime in the afternoon on the same day as the apportionment results, on or before April 30th. They will also be posted on the Census website, and the link to the press kit is shown here. The quality metrics will be available to the public in two different ways on the Census website. First, through an interactive dashboard. The dashboard was designed to easily focus on the quality metrics of interest, and allow a user to easily compare the 2020 census to the 2010 census numbers, to the United States total, to a particular state, and compare one state to another. Second, a downloadable Excel spreadsheet will also be available. The spreadsheet will contain three different tabs, one showing the final 2020 numbers for the quality metrics. The second tab will show the Census 2010 numbers, and a third tab will contain some definitions and other key information. Table fill with no numbers included is currently available now on census.gov. I also want to mention that alongside the metrics themselves will be technical information, including a frequently asked questions or FAQs document, and a blog discussing some of the initial results will also be released. So, what will the operational quality metrics tell us? As mentioned before, some natural comparisons that users may want to make with the operational quality metrics include comparing the 2020 census to the 2010 census metrics, comparing the U.S. total to individual states, and comparing from one state to another. These comparisons can show how similar or different results are from the 2020 to the 2010 census, or perhaps how similar or different specific states' results are to the U.S. total. Also, how similar or different one state's results are compared with another state. Data users may also be interested in states with the largest or smallest percentage change in a metric between the two censuses, from the 2010 to the 2020 census, or in the state rankings for a particular metric. Next, I want to walk through a few examples of things the quality metrics show. Here we point to the self-response occupied category. Now, this will show the percent of total addresses that were determined to be occupied and where the census data was obtained from either an online, a phone, or a mailback response. This data can then be compared to individual states, to the U.S. total, or from the 2020 to the 2010 census. I want to note that the self-response numbers are an important operational quality metric, as self-responses are preferable because they are quick, efficient, and of high quality, and don't typically require further action or follow-up. This is where we get the majority of the census responses. Now, I do want to mention that the self-response percentages in the quality metrics will differ slightly from the previously released self-response rates from the map that I mentioned earlier. The metric numbers will be slightly lower for two reasons. One is that the self-response rates map included responses from self-response and update leave areas only, as those were the areas in which we specifically provided census questionnaires for self-response purposes. While the operational quality metrics include addresses in all enumeration areas, such as update enumerate or remote Alaska, but also group quarters. The second reason is the impact of our various post-processing procedures. These include unduplication processes, as well as matching responses submitted without a census ID to existing addresses and adding new addresses that we found. A second example shown here is the percent of addresses unresolved after data collection. As mentioned before, this is one of the subcategories of cases that went to the last resort process of what we call count imputation. In order to determine status and fill in the number of people living at an address using established statistical methods. While the improved unduplication procedures are new to the 2020 census, the percent unresolved after data collection can be directly compared to the 2010 census figures. In the 2010 census, this was only about 0.4% of the total population. This is less than half of one percentage point. Last week, we reported that we expect a similarly small percentage of addresses will need count imputation because they were not accounted for during our data collection operation. Next is the percentage of occupied addresses that were counted during non-response follow-up with either a household member, from a proxy respondent, or using administrative records. Here, we point to the percent obtained by a household interview from someone living at that address. This is an important measure of quality, as household respondents are more likely to provide accurate information than others, such as proxy respondents, like neighbors, or from administrative records. If we're able to reach someone living at that address, they can easily tell us not only how many people live there on census day, but also are likely to provide good information on the other census questions, such as whether the home is owned or rented, or the age, sex, race, or origin of each person. Ultimately, when we are in non-response follow-up with occupied houses, we are able to get an interview to collect the data from a household member the majority of the time. Most of that time, we collect very good and high-quality information. The quality metrics will show the percent of these households in non-response that provided only minimal information of just the required population count and no other characteristics, such as age, sex, race, or so on. Conversely, the percent of non-response follow-up addresses resolved by proxy is important to know from a quality perspective for the opposite reason, in that neighbors or building managers or others are less likely to be as knowledgeable about all occupants of that household. A neighbor, for instance, can usually say with confidence if a home or address is occupied or vacant, and maybe perhaps exactly how many people live there, but answers for the demographic questions such as age, sex, race, Hispanic origin, or whether owned or rented will tend to be lower quality. Lastly, in this section, I want to mention the percent of addresses resolved with administrative records. While we only made use of higher quality records when appropriate, after extensive modeling and research and confident that the data was reliable, as stated before, we do generally prefer to reach a household member at each address in non-response follow-up, as that person is likely to be the most knowledgeable about the current situation as of Census Day, which of course was on April 1st last year. But the use of administrative records is a new innovation for the 2020 census, and we are assessing this further. Next, I want to point out that there's a lot of information in the operational quality metrics. It's important for users to be aware of the context for each of the statistics, such as the specific universe for a given metric. For instance, in this example, we see that the row labels are the same in several different places. That is because proxy responses are possible in different situations during non-response follow-up. And a proxy respondent could be the source for an occupied address, for a vacant address, or for a deleted address. Next in this webinar, I want to talk a little bit about things to consider when making comparisons between the 2020 and 2010 censuses, or from one state to another. The first point is that differences across geographies from one state to another, or by subpopulation, are expected. Each state is unique, and things can change over time. Moreover, differences may be the result of changes the Census Bureau can control, such as differences in the way we collect the data. For instance, we modernized the 2020 census by adding an internet response option and also using high-quality administrative records to resolve some non-responding households. Neither of these were available in the 2010 census. Differences may also be the result of environmental changes, such as predictable changes in the population, population growth or movement, trends in respondent behavior, or various acts of nature, like a pandemic, wildfires, or hurricanes. Different doesn't necessarily mean better or worse. It can sometimes just mean different. We want to caution that attributing any differences or magnitude of differences to any specific factor would be nearly impossible due to confounding effects of countless separate influences. Rather, our analyses will focus on understanding if any differences we see are explainable, given all of these collective factors. So this is showing an image of what the interactive dashboard looks like in comparing two states with another on the quality metrics. I want to caution that this is just fictitious data. The real numbers will be viewable when the metrics are released next week. But for example, this just shows a comparison of California and New York on self-responsiveness. While in that comparison view, a user can easily change the states that are shown using the drop-downs at the top, or change to viewing between the 2020 and 2010 census numbers, or jump to a different set of metrics entirely if they wish. Similarly, this shows a fictitious comparison of the self-response metrics by mode, that is internet, paper, or phone, for the U.S. as a whole between 2020 and 2010. Although the data is not real, I do want to mention that the internet was the predominant mode of self-response in the 2020 census. More than half of the country responded online, which is amazing. Whereas in the 2010 census, most all self-responses were paper, with the respondents returning a questionnaire back in the mail, and a very small amount by calling over the phone. Now, before I turn it back to Virginia for the question and answer period, I wanted to highlight a few useful links for various background information, including a neat look back at the 2020 census, the 2020 census operational plan, the type of enumeration area viewer for 2020, and the corresponding 2010 map, and a blog introducing the operational quality metrics from a few weeks ago. Today, we talked about the April release of the operational quality metrics, but we have more planned, including some planned for later in May 2021, that will report similar information as we discussed today, but by average household size, and data metrics on households with one and with two people in them. Now, that's all I have for today. Thank you very much, and back to Virginia.
Great. Thank you, Michael. We'd now like to open it up for accredited members of the media to ask questions. Please state your name and affiliation before your question. In the essence of time, we will allow one question and one follow-up. In addition to Michael Bentley, we also have Jennifer Reichert, who is the Assistant Division Chief of Non-Response Evaluations and Experiments in our Decennial Census Management Division, on the line to answer your questions. Operator, can you please provide instructions for calling in?
Yes, thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please dial star 1, unmute your phone, and record your name and outlet clearly. If you need to withdraw your question, please dial star 2. Again, to ask a question, please dial star 1. It will take just a few moments for those questions to come through.
Great. Thank you, operator. While we allow for callers to dial in, we want to highlight our upcoming releases. By April 30th, we will release the first results for the 2020 census. The first 2020 census results will include the apportionment population count, resident population count, and the overseas population counts for each of the 50 states. We will also publish resident population counts for the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico. However, their populations are not included in the apportionment population because they do not have voting seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. The 2020 census apportionment data will consist of three tables, which will be similar to tables 1 through 3 that were included in the 2010 census apportionment data. Each of the three tables will also include totals for the United States. Similar to previous censuses, population counts below the state level and demographic characteristics like age, sex, race, or Hispanic origin will not be included with this release, but will be available later this year, starting with the release of the redistricting data. The 2020 census apportionment tables and maps, along with supplemental materials, will be available in the 2020 census apportionment press kit. And as we've discussed today, we will release additional quality metrics related to the 2020 census. As we've processed the results from the 2020 census, we've issued a series of blogs discussing data processing and data quality. Please visit census.gov to find a full list of the topics we've covered. The quality metrics discussed today will be released on the same day as the first 2020 census results. For the operational quality metrics, we will release a blog, table, and dashboard. We will also release a working paper and blog focused on comparisons of the 2020 census results to the established benchmarks of demographic analysis and population estimates. You can find more information regarding data quality and processing on our press kit at census.gov. Operator, are we ready for our first caller?
Yes, our first caller is Mike Schneider from the Associated Press. Mike, your line is open.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for holding this. I was just wondering why this first release on data metrics isn't going to be at smaller geographies, when that would probably be more insightful as to showing areas where lesser quality data was used.
Thanks for that question, Mike. Michael Bentley?
Hi, thank you for your question. We are assessing what is possible in the future for sub-state metrics, but we also have to follow our disclosure review practices and be cautious about releasing information below the state level for some of this information, but it is something we are assessing.
And will that, the smaller geographies be released, or the metrics on the smaller geographies be released with the redistricting data?
Michael?
We're still evaluating all of that, but anything on these related to these quality metrics that gets released below the state level will have to be reviewed for disclosure very carefully. It's possible it'll be summarized data and not quite as exact as some of these metrics that we're talking about today.
Great. Thank you, Mike. Operator, can we have our next caller?
Our next caller is Michael McEnony from CQ Roll Call. Michael, your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for holding this. I wanted to ask, are the metrics that you're planning to release April 30th or the ones that are releasing in May, are they going to count against the privacy loss budget in differential privacy, or are they, you know, being considered outside of that?
Thank you for your question. The short answer is no, not against the privacy loss budget. I do want to note again, though, that all of the metrics, these metrics will use rounded counts, and they have been carefully reviewed for disclosure of this risk in accordance with our disclosure review standards, but no differential privacy techniques were applied.
Thank you, Michael. Operator, can we have our next caller?
Yes, our next caller is Hansi Wong from NPR. Hansi, your line is open.
Thank you very much. How is the Census Bureau in this first set of quality metrics going to indicate that some of these completion rates per state are including cases that were not necessarily closed using the same set of criteria? And I'm referring to in the early months of nationwide NERFU, when there were, for example, fewer contact attempts in some areas under the replan. How will the Census Bureau indicate that in any way in technical documentation or just in those rates when they release it, these metrics?
Thanks for your question, Hansi. Michael, are you able to answer that?
Hi, this is Jennifer. Jennifer Reichert. I'll address that question. With the replan, we did not reduce the number of contacts for the actual production NERFU cases. Those were just for some of the quality control. That is not indicated in any of these metrics per se. That would be something that would be, if we were to document anything like that for the special types of cases where we did that, it would be later on in our sort of operational assessments. That's not something that would be reflected in the quality metrics.
If I could ask my follow-up question, Mr. Bentley, I think I heard you say that the quality metrics that you were presenting about will be coming out next week. Does that mean that this week is not a possibility for the metrics to be coming out?
So, Hansi, I can take that. The deadline to deliver these metrics along with the apportionment counts is by April 30th, and so we'll keep you updated on a date. Operator, can we have our next caller?
Yes, our next caller is Zach Montalero from Politico. Zach, your line is open.
Hey, all. Thanks for doing this. A bit of a quick follow-up to Hansi's question. With the release of the quality metrics and the apportionment numbers next week or whenever it will be, can you give us a little bit more guidance on how the release will come? Is it going to be like a Taylor Swift album that just shows up and everyone's excited? Are you expecting to give a day's notice? How should we expect to prepare for the quality metrics and apportionment numbers?
Thanks, Zach. I can take that question. Once we announce a date, we will send out a media advisory with all information regarding how to access the information. So we just remind everyone on the line to please sign up for our email subscriptions to receive any future announcements regarding a date. Operator, can we have our next caller?
Our next caller is Alex Everett from Bloomberg. Alex, your line is open.
Thanks so much for having this. Can you explain to me a little bit how, if the Bureau is using this high-quality administrative records data for the first time, we're still getting about that same amount of the unresponse numbers here, where you had said that the proportion of that would be similar to the 2010 census? Basically, what I'm trying to ask is, if we're using these records, why are we still having to sort of go in and input the data as best as we can in these areas where we have gaps? Thanks.
Thanks for your question, Alex. Michael, is that something you're able to take?
I don't know if Jennifer wants to elaborate on what I'm about to say, but thank you for your question. I will say first that we do believe that the administrative records helped us in a lot of ways, but that unresolved number that you'll see the exact numbers when the metrics are released next week, but we are still talking a very small number in below a percentage point. As I mentioned, the 2010 number was about 0.4%, and we've stated that, we have a similar number unresolved after data collection this time. We're talking the very hardest to enumerate households ultimately, and it's something that we're forever struggling with and trying to improve on, but trying to get that to zero ultimately.
Yeah, and I'll just add, this is Jennifer Reichert, I'll just add that, our research into the use of administrative records showed pretty clearly across the entire decade that, we don't have 100% coverage of the population with administrative records. So it was never really a goal of using administrative records to necessarily further reduce that already very small number of unresolved cases. But what the big benefit of using them did was to help us reduce the amount of work that we had to do in that non-response follow-up operation by using the administrative records when we had them so that we could focus our efforts on those cases that did require that sort of in-person and face-to-face interview in order to collect the accurate data. I hope that helps.
Great. Thank you for your question. Operator, can we have our next caller?
We are currently showing no further questions at this time. If you would like to ask another question or would like to ask a question, please dial *1, unmute your phone, and record your name and outlet clearly. And it will take just a few moments for those questions to come through. Okay, perfect. And we do have Mike Schneider again from Associated Press. Mike, your line is open.
Hi. Michael, I was wondering if you just kind of put this in historical context. Does the Bureau feel like there's a need to build confidence in the accuracy of the numbers this year, say, compared to previous decennial censuses, just because of the hurdles you cited in conducting the 2020 census?
Michael, are you able to take that?
Yeah, thank you for your question. Can you elaborate a little more? You're talking about perhaps putting in.
I think it's been explained that to some degree, the reason these metrics are being released in a very timely fashion is to restore confidence in the numbers. just because of all of the difficulties from the pandemic to the wildfires to, issues over the citizenship question, et cetera. So I'm just wondering, does the Bureau feel like there's a need to sell the public on the accuracy of the numbers, say more so than they've had to do in past decennial censuses?
I see. Yeah, I think there might be a little bit of a truth to that. But, you know, as you said, we are trying to be very transparent and, you know, we do feel good about what we did with the 2020 census. We, you know, ultimately, and I think you'll agree when you start seeing the numbers that the numbers are all ultimately the quality looks like it's very comparable to the 2010 census. But we want everyone that's using the data to feel that way.
Thank you. Operator, can we have our next caller? Operator, can we have our next caller?
Yes, our next caller is Paul Overberg from the Wall Street Journal. Paul, your line is open.
Hi, thanks for holding this session. My question is, have you published a list of the administrative records that you deem high quality and or the criteria in terms of the usage of those records that makes them high quality or that or the combinations thereof? And if you haven't, will you?
Thank you for that question. Jennifer, if you want to take that?
Yeah, I will take that. Hi, Paul. I need to look to see whether it's actually been published or not. We certainly have that well documented. So I think I'll have to look into where that's published and how accessible it is. And if you want to reach back out to PIO, we can get back to you with that on where that documentation is and how accessible it is to you. But we certainly have that well documented, so I'll look into the availability of it for you.
And I just want to add that we do have this information in an administrative records blog that we posted recently. So we'll definitely point you to there. And, Paul, you had another question?
Well, I was just going to follow up and say, will it be part of the package of information that comes out with the quality metrics?
No, I don't think it's planned to be a part of that package. So we'd have to, it would have to be a separate, it won't be part of that package. So we'd have to point you to a different place, but we can work on that.
Thank you. Operator, can we have our next caller?
Yes. Our next question comes from Hansi Wong from NPR. Hansi, your line is open.
Thank you. I just want to confirm the current self-response rate map on the Census Bureau website says the data was last updated January 28th of this year. And so what the Bureau is planning to do once the apportionment results are released with the quality metrics, that map will be updated with the most, the latest self-response rate. Is that right?
Thanks for your question.
Hi,
Angela, are you able to take that?
Hi, Andy. Yes. Hi, Andy. Thanks for the question. So the numbers on the census website, 67.0%, that is our final self-response rate. The numbers that will come out with the quality metrics will be slightly different from that. It's a little bit of a nuance, but like I said, there's the numbers and the metrics include everything in the census universe, whereas the self-response rates don't, for good reason, because it only includes the self-response and the update leave areas, which is where we specifically provided census questionnaires to in the mail or by dropping them off. So there's a small remainder, such as update enumerate and group quarters, that we don't do that for. And also the quality metrics are after we've completed all post-processing. Self-response rates, as they are, 67%, are a pure measure of cooperation with reaching all addresses that are eligible for self-response. This is more of a collective measure.
And if I could ask a quick follow-up question then, what we will see in these quality metric tables and whatever other formats, this specific metric will be called self-response. I forget what your slides show, I'm sorry, but will it be called self-response or will there be some type of new terminology to help the public distinguish between the self-response rate map, for example, and this slightly different metric that will be released?
We're using the term self-response. It's really sort of the portion out of the whole census universe that we use the response from self-response. But we don't have a new term for it, as far as I know.
Thank you. Operator, can we have our next caller?
Yes, our next caller is Steve Warren from China America Radio. Steve, your line is open.
Hi, just a quick question about when we'll be able to see the ethnic breakdowns of the population with the new administration putting a heavy emphasis on the clout and the importance of multiple ethnicities. I'm wondering when we'll be able to see exactly how many people and where they are from the different ethnic groups that represent the population?
Yes, I can take that. Information on demographic characteristics like age, sex, race, or Hispanic origin will be released later this year with the start of the release of the redistricting data. So I just welcome you to subscribe to our news alerts, and that way you're going to receive any future notices regarding any specific dates for that upcoming data. Operator, can we have our next caller?
We are showing no further questions.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. We appreciate you coming and listening to us today. As a reminder, I welcome everyone to visit census.gov. We will be posting more information in the coming days. Members of the media may also contact PIO@census.gov or call 301-763-3030 for more information. The website will be available on our press kit today. We will also have a transcript and audio recording of today's event. This concludes today's webinar. Thank you all for joining.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time.